Mammon and the Archer. Old Anthony Rockwall, retired manufacturer and owner of Rockwall's Eureka Soap, looked out of the library window of his Fifth Avenue mansion and smiled. His neighbor to the right, the old aristocrat, frowned as usual at the ornate sculpture on the front of the soap palace. "Stuck-up old man," exclaimed the ex-soap king. "Next summer I'll have this house painted red, white, and blue, and that will give him something to frown about." And then Anthony Rockwall went to the door of his library and shouted, "Mike!" in a loud, authoritative voice. "Tell my son," said Anthony to the servant, who came running in, "to come in here before he goes out." When young Rockwall entered the library, the old man put down his newspaper, looked at him kindly, and ran one hand through his white hair. "Richard," said Anthony Rockwall, "what do you pay for the soap that you use?" Richard, only recently home from university, was a little surprised. He didn't understand his father, who could behave as unpredictably as a girl at her first party.
$6 a dozen, I think, Dad."
"And your clothes?"
"I suppose about $60 generally."
"You're a gentleman," said Anthony. "I've heard of young men who pay $24 a dozen for soap and more than $100 for clothes. You've got as much money to spend as the rest of them. But you behave in a moderate way. Now, I use Eureka soap, not only for sentiment, but because it's the purest soap made. If you pay more than 10 cents for a cake of soap, you just buy bad perfumes and labels. However, 50 cents is very good for a young man of your generation and position. As I said, you're a gentleman. They say it takes 3 generations to make a gentleman, but they're wrong. Money can do it faster. It's made you one, and it's almost made one of me. I'm almost as impolite, bad-tempered, and bad-mannered as the 2 old gentlemen who live on either side of me and can't sleep at night because I bought the house between theirs. There are some things that money can't buy," remarked young Rockwall, rather sadly.
"Now don't say that," said old Anthony, shocked. "Tell me something that money won't buy."
"For one thing," answered Richard, "it won't buy me into the exclusive circles of society."
"Ho, ho, won't it?" shouted Anthony. "You tell me where your exclusive circles would be if the First Astor hadn't had the money to pay for a cheap ticket on the boat across the Atlantic."
Richard sighed.
"That's why I asked you to come in," said the old man, more calmly. "There's something wrong with you, boy. I've been noticing it for 2 weeks. Come on, tell me. If it's your health, our boat is down in the port, ready to sail to the Bahamas in 2 days.
"Not a bad guess, Dad. You're nearly right."
"Ah," said Anthony sharply. "What's her name?"
Richard began to walk up and down the library floor. There was enough friendship and sympathy in this rough old father of his to make Richard want to confide in him.
"Why don't you ask her?" demanded old Anthony. "She won't say no. You've got the money and the looks, and you're a decent boy. Your hands are clean. You've got no Eureka soap on them. You've been to university, but she won't mind that."
"I haven't had the opportunity," said Richard.
"Make one," said Anthony. "Take her for a walk in the park, or walk home with her from church." "Opportunity? Pshaw!"
"You don't understand, Dad. She's so involved in the social scene. Every hour and minute of her time is planned days before. I must have that girl, Dad, or I'll never be happy. And I can't write to her about it. I can't do that."
"Tut," said the old man. "Are you telling me that with all your money, you can't get an hour or two of a girl's time for yourself?"
"I've put it off too late. She's going to sail for Europe at noon the day after tomorrow for a 2-year stay. I'm seeing her alone tomorrow evening for a few minutes. She's at Larchmont now, at her aunt's house. I can't go there, but I'm allowed to meet her with a horse-drawn cab at the Grand Central Station tomorrow evening. She's arriving on the 8:30 train.
We'll drive down Broadway to Wallach's Theater, where her mother and some friends will be waiting for us in the entrance hall. Do you think she would listen to a declaration of love from me during that 6 to 8 minutes under those circumstances? No. And what chance would I have in the theater or afterwards? None. No, Dad, this is one problem that your money can't solve. We can't buy 1 minute of time with money. If we could, rich people would live longer. There's no hope of being able to talk to Miss Lantry before she sails to Europe. All right, Richard, my boy, said old Anthony. You may go to your club now. I'm happy it isn't your health. You say money won't buy time? Well, of course you can't order eternity to be sent to your home for a price. But I've seen Father Time get damaged when he walked through the gold mines. That night, gentle, sentimental, wealthy Aunt Ellen came to see Brother Anthony as he was reading his evening paper. She began to talk about the troubles that lovers have. He told me all about it, said Anthony, yawning. I told him my bank account was at his service. He said money couldn't help. He said 10 millionaires couldn't change the rules of society.
Oh, Anthony, sighed Aunt Ellen. I wish you would not think so much of money. Wealth is nothing compared to true love. Love is all-powerful. If only he had spoken earlier, she could not have refused our Richard. But now I fear it's too late. He will have no opportunity to speak to her. All your gold cannot bring happiness to your son.
At 8 o'clock the next evening, Aunt Ellen took an old gold ring from its box and gave it to Richard.
Wear it tonight, nephew, she begged. Your mother gave it to me. She said it brought good luck and love. She asked me to give it to you when you had found the one you loved.
Young Richard took the ring and tried it on his finger, but the ring was too small. He took it off and put it into his waistcoat pocket. Then he phoned for his cab. At the station, Richard pulled Miss Lantry out of the crowd. The time was 8:32.
We mustn't keep Mama and the others waiting, she said.
To Wallach's Theater as fast as you can drive, said Richard loyally.
They raced up 42nd Street to Broadway, and at 34th Street, Richard ordered the driver to stop.
I've dropped a ring, he apologized as he climbed out. It was my mother's, and I'd hate to lose it. I won't be a minute. I saw where it fell.
In less than a minute, he was back in the cab with the ring. But in that minute, a car had stopped directly in front of the cab. The driver tried to pass to the left, but a heavy express van was blocking the road. He tried the right, but had to back away from a furniture van that had no right to be there. He was blocked in a flood of vehicles and horses. One of those traffic jams that can suddenly bring a big city to a stop.
Why don't you drive on? Said Miss Lantry impatiently. We'll be late.
Richard stood up in the cab and looked around. The entire traffic of Manhattan seemed to have stopped around them. The oldest New Yorker among the thousands of spectators on the pavements had never seen a traffic jam like this one. I'm very sorry, said Richard as he sat down. But it looks as if we are stuck. It will take more than an hour to get the traffic moving. It's my fault. If I hadn't dropped the ring, we...
Let me see the ring, said Miss Lantry. Now that we can't move, I don't care. I think theaters are stupid anyway.
At 11 o'clock that night, somebody knocked lightly on Anthony Rockwall's door.
Come in, shouted Anthony,
who was wearing a red dressing gown and reading a book of pirate adventures. The somebody was Aunt Ellen.
They're engaged, Anthony, she said softly. She has promised to marry our Richard.
On the way to the theater, there was a traffic jam, and the cab was stuck in it for 2 hours.
And, Brother Anthony, don't overestimate the power of money again. It was a little ring, a little symbol of true love. That was the cause of our Richard finding his happiness. He dropped it in the street and got out to find it. Before they could continue on their way, the traffic jam happened. Richard spoke to his love and won her there while the cab was stuck. Money is nothing compared to true love, Anthony.
All right, said old Anthony. I'm glad the boy has got what he wanted. I told him I would pay whatever it cost if...
But, Brother Anthony, what good could your money have done?
Sister, said Anthony Rockwall, my pirate is having great problems. His ship has just been hit, and he's too good a judge of the value of money to let it sink. I wish you would let me continue with this chapter.
The story should end here. I would like it to, and I'm sure you would also. But we must know the truth. The next day, a man called Kelly came to Anthony Rockwall's house and was at once taken into the library.
Let's see, said Anthony, taking out his checkbook. You had $5,000 in cash.
I paid out $300 more of my own, said Kelly. I had to go a little above the estimate. I got the express vans and cabs mostly for $5, but the trucks and two horse teams cost me $10 each. The motormen wanted $10, and some even wanted $20. But the policemen cost me the most money. I paid two of them $50, and the rest $20 and $25.
But didn't it work beautifully, Mr. Rockwall? The boys were on time to a fraction of a second. It was 2 hours before anyone could move.
$1,300. There you are, Kelly, said Anthony, tearing off a check. Your $1,000 and the $300 you spent. You don't despise money, do you, Kelly?
Me? Said Kelly. I can beat the man who invented poverty. Anthony called Kelly when he was at the door.
You didn't notice, said he. In all of the traffic jam, a little boy with no clothes on, shooting an arrow with a bow, did you?
Why, no, said Kelly, puzzled. I didn't. If he was like you say, maybe the police caught him before I got there.
I didn't think the little rascal would be there, laughed Anthony. Goodbye, Kelly.